Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. Okay. I am your host, Ed Villanueva, and alongside me, not as always, is not Mr. Chad Riley, because he's not here with us today, but Spencer Williams, as you just heard, is with us, and he is ready to rock and roll.
That was a really long way to say Chad's not here.
Yeah, well,
and that I am.
It needed to be dramatic. It needed to have, you know, that whole drawn-out thing. Either way, you know what? That's not the point. The point is, in his place, we got a Chad replacement, and in Chad's place, we have Mr. Alex Amaro, a good friend. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Spencer, how you doing?
Good.
You sure you're good?
I said good three times.
You positive?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure, because you know you're a robot and everything.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of robots, we got a great show in store for you today, as we're going to be talking about the recently released film Alita Battle Angel. So stick around as we dive into that. There's nothing like a beautiful day in Iron City, and we love our times digging around at the scrapyard. When we're not searching for robots, the Filmlosophers podcast is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios. If you've ever wanted cybernetic enhancements, get some speakers in your ear. And check out The Filmlosophers. New episodes of the podcast debut each Wednesday on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boon. So it's like we're right there beside you.
As cyborgs, we know the importance of human interactions. That's why we promote our human counterparts by engaging with them on socials. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. We promise we won't give you a virus. We've made it!
Maybe we won't give him a virus.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We're at 150 episodes. Don't miss a single one. So after this episode, head over to filmlosophers.com to catch up on all the ones that you haven't heard yet.
That's right. We have finally, well, we are about to hit 150 episodes. That is, what is that? That's a little over it's close to almost 3 years. So.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Normally, this is one of those moments where it's just like, oh, yeah, we made it. Because honestly, and I'm going to be real, like when we first started this thing, it was for fun and we were having fun with it. That was the whole point of it. But then it turned into like this passion project that we started doing. Me and Chad started, and then we brought in Spencer along with several other people to come and give their, you know, their area of expertise. Spencer at the time, we just loved his reactions to the movie Mother.
When we
went, it was a great episode. Like,
that was a confusing movie.
Some movies can do that to you. So,
well, and the whole reason why, like, we really brought him on the show was because, like, after we had the opportunity to sit down and talk with him before the episode, all we remember hearing him say was that movie, just that movie.
Do you have that soundbite?
I don't even know. No, unfortunately, I got to go back through the archives.
Started doing that stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, hey, but I mean, it's cool to see how the times have begun to change, and Spencer's no longer just a contributor, but he's a regular part of the team now. And we have, like, with Alex coming in and, you know, giving his area of expertise on the film that we're going to be talking about right now. It's kind of like it's really great to see how much the podcast has grown and how we're moving into that realm of, you know, having a sense of regularity, you know?
Yeah.
Well, just so your listeners know, my expertise is just being an average Joe. I'm just that average guy that likes to just go watch movies. So I go watch probably movie. I go to movie theaters probably at least about 3-4 times a month.
But that's actually more than most people, in all honesty.
That was more before I started going.
I was going to say, that was probably more than this guy here.
Oh, yeah, I just love movies. You know, me and my wife, every opportunity we get, go, you know, go see a movie. So I just love going to movies, and I collect them also.
Well, speaking of movies, we're going to be talking about this one right here, Alita Battle Angel. Like I said, we got a chance to check it out, and we saw the film. And needless to say, we had some hesitation. There was certain, you know, hesitancy on all our parts when we talked about it, just because there wasn't a lot of stuff that was out there in terms of information about it. And so we finally got the chance. We bit the bullet. I remember the moment we told Spencer, this is what we're going to see. I think Spencer had the biggest fit that I'd ever seen him have in the history of this podcast. So now that we're actually reviewing it, let's go ahead and dive right into that official synopsis. So when Alita awakens with no memory of who she is in a future world she does not recognize, she is taken in by Ito, a compassionate doctor who realizes that somewhere in this abandoned cyborg shell is the heart and soul of a young woman with an extraordinary past. As Alita learns to navigate her new life on the treacherous streets of Iron City, Ito tries to shield her from her mysterious history, while her street-smart new friend Hugo offers instead to help trigger her memories. But it is only when the deadly and corrupt forces that run the city come after Alita that she discovers a clue to her past. She has a unique fighting ability that those in power will stop at nothing to control. If she can stay out of their grasp, she could be the key to saving her friends, her family, and the world she's grown to love. Directed by Robert Rodriguez, the film stars Rosa Salazar, Christoph Waltz, Jennifer Connelly, Mahershala Ali, Ed Skrin, Jackie Earle Haley, and Keen Johnson. Keenan? I thought, at first, wait, isn't that the guy from SNL? Not Keenan. Keen?
No, that guy's name's Keenan.
What did you say?
Keenan. I've been saying the same word repeatedly.
Either way. The film, a combination of the first four books in Yukita Kishiru's series of manga books, Motorball from books 3 and 4, and the stories from books 1 and 2. The film was produced by James Cameron, who also holds a writing credit to the film. So, in case you didn't know, he was a part of the writing team that created this. What's unique about this film is that James Cameron actually had talked way back in like 2005 about creating this movie. He had mentioned that he was wanting to create it, but there were two things that were keeping him from doing that. And number one was the beginning of the Avatar series that he was doing in creating that and wanting to build that world. And then secondly, the technology wasn't there for what he wanted to do. So he was in the process of trying to figure out that. And then essentially Robert Rodriguez heard about, which if you're not familiar with Robert Rodriguez, he's the guy who directed the Spy Kids, the first Spy Kids movie, among other things. Like I think he did one of the Grindhouse films from Quentin Tarantino's thing. I think it was Planet Terror. But Robert Rodriguez actually mentioned that he was interested in it, and James Cameron said, hey, you know what? It's already written. If you want to direct, by all means. I think Robert Rodriguez actually had to finish like what was in the script to prove that he could do it. So needless to say, it's a combination of Robert Rodriguez and James Cameron's mind, so that, you know, put that where you will. The film itself had a budget of $200 million, and as of February 18th, the domestic total so far is $42 million, which isn't bad, seeing as it opened on Valentine's Day and moved through the entire week up until after the fact, and so in that given space of time, it's actually pretty good, you know, but I mean, in terms of a lot of other films, it's still the beginning of the year. And one of the things that we always talk about on this podcast is at the beginning of the year, it's usually the time and the season when most studios try to push movies out that they're not too worried about getting Oscar nods, because they are usually just like, oh, it's the beginning of the year. We need to put something out so we can hold on to a franchise, or we can do this and that, or we can just create this. Usually it's a good time for passion projects, like things like obviously like this, or the Deadpool franchise, or even what was that movie? The one with Oprah Winfrey and
A
Wrinkle in Time. That was earlier in the year last year. One of the passion projects by Ava DuVernay. So needless to say, you know, for what it's worth and for what it's coming out to and the time of the year, I mean, it did pretty decent. So, but that's not to say that reflects what we think. So kind of talking about our thoughts, I can see Spencer's eyes, and Spencer is already dreading this conversation. Like, I'm, yeah. Before we jump into that, Al, I wanted to ask you, like, what were some of the expectations you had, like, since you said you just regularly go to the movies? So you're, like you said, you're considering yourself the average Joe. What were some of your thoughts in terms of the expectations for this film? Because you're the one who actually approached me about it.
Well, first of all, I didn't even know what to really expect. I just, you know, just saw the trailers. And, you know, I'm a big guy in trailers. I like watching trailers, go to iTunes and check out trailers, or just, you know, just even on YouTube, you know, subscribing to trailers. So I just thought it looked like a cool movie, since I'm a guy that just likes movies. But this is one film that my wife didn't really care to go see. She doesn't like the, I don't know, the thought, I guess, the robots and the future and all that stuff. So no one didn't really want to go see it with me, but I knew one guy that would. So that's why I gave Eddie a call. Say, hey, you want to go see this movie with me in here? Most definitely. Anytime this guy gets the opportunity to go see a movie, he don't care if he saw it once or twice, or he'll go jump on that. So,
yes, sir.
Not knowing what to expect, but just in hopes of, you know, just a good action movie, something that I can enjoy and watch and not leave that movie theater feeling like a loser. But because I have left movie theaters like I felt like a loser. That was a waste of money.
You know, and that's interesting, because so you have no clue about this, but me and Alex actually go way back, like way back. We've been friends for about almost 13 years, for almost 14 years, actually.
Yeah, almost 50, yeah, for a while now.
So we've been friends for a while, and I don't ever remember hearing him mention of a movie that he really didn't like. Like, because we used to go to the movies a lot when we used to hang out a lot more. We would go, me, Alex, and a couple other guys, we would always go to the movies and watch just about everything. Everything.
Yeah, we would go probably line up like 2 hours before the movie even started just to get the best seats
those
in the
days.
House.
We had to do that.
Yeah, and then, you know, when this new system came out, I was like, what in the world? You got to reserve seats, but I love it now. Yeah. I'm on top of it. When a movie, I'm like, when I see an alert on my Cinemark app, I was like, oops, I'm getting my seats. First pick.
You hear that, Cinemark? We're promoting you.
Uh-oh.
No, but I it's funny, because it was at that theater that we used to go to all the time. That's where that situation I think I shared with you, Spence, where I had tried to hide all those cheeseburgers in the jacket sleeves that I had, because there was a McDonald's down the street from there. But from all the time that I've known you, I don't know if I could ever recollect a time where you've actually really disliked a movie. So if there is one, I actually am interested in hearing it.
Oh my gosh. You know, now my mind is just like going, like, I can't really just name one right off the bat. Let me think.
Well, how about this? I'll give you time to think, because I want to ask Spencer this as well, because Spencer is very vocal about movies he doesn't like. That is a very obvious one. That is a very obvious point about Spencer. But this particular film, now, I wish I had started recording the episode earlier when I mentioned to you that we were gonna do this movie, because the fit that you threw, the outburst that you had standing there, I literally thought you were gonna do a whole Wreck-It Ralph, you know, I'm gonna wreck this house, you know, and destroy the home, you know, that we're in right now. But I'm trying to think. I don't know if there was ever another movie that you've experienced that has given you that big of a reaction, because this was pretty severe.
Okay, the closest would have been Bumblebee, probably.
Really?
Because, like, but that was for different reasons. This movie one reason.
You know what? I kind of a little concur what he's saying about Bumblebee. That's one of them.
Okay.
Yes, he's on my side already.
Yeah, okay. You know, I'm a huge Transformer guy. Mm-hmm. I'm from the 80s. I'm an 80s baby. Optimus Prime, Megatron, growing up on G.I. Joe. I mean, I loved it. And I was really excited seeing the trailers of that movie, Bumblebee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing, oh my gosh, the G1 Transformers. And I was just so excited. So my expectations of that movie was really, really, really high. Now, I went to go watch the movie, and I walked out of there, and they're like, what'd you think of the movie? I'm like, It was okay, but really turned me off was John Cena. I think Bumblebee, that movie was directed more for kids.
Yeah.
It was directed, and I do wish that Michael Bay stop process was G1. And if I think Michael Bay had his hand in there a little bit, I think I would have enjoyed it a little more. But I didn't walk out of there feeling like a loser, but I was a little disappointed. It's like, I can't buy that movie. I'm not going to watch it again.
Huh. And just a quick note, if you're wondering or if you're playing along at home, Lesson 143 is the episode where we review Bumblebee, so check it out after the episode. But so that was a movie that you weren't too keen on, but what was the movie that you just, in your words, as you walked out, felt like this was just a bad choice?
Oh, gosh. Just most recently, the most recent one, I think, is Bumblebee.
Really?
Again, my expectations was really high on it, and I you know, I felt like whoever directed it really failed me, because, you know, I was thinking G1 Transformers through the whole thing, and then it didn't happen. You know, Shockwave, Soundwave. I mean, just to see them guys on the trailers, and they really pumped it up. Like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be so exciting! Starscream, the original Starscream, but it wasn't even Starscream. I mean, just all these things, and again, I really, really, really felt disappointed on that movie.
And I can understand that as well from what we just talked about. I think for me, the closest thing to me feeling like that would probably have to be. I honestly, the only thing that comes to mind is Solo. Like, I felt like I learned less about the Star Wars franchise just by watching that movie. Like, I felt like I did a disservice to George Lucas, and I should apologize. But I think in terms of that, but that kind of brings me to a point with this particular movie, in that this film, we had a lot of those feelings coming into this movie. Like, we were thinking, I know me personally, in terms of expectations, I was thinking like, you know what? This movie's, I don't want to see it, but I think, and I'm going to be honest, totally honest, I'm actually, like, in my mind, I was thinking, I don't really want to see this movie, but I really want to see Spencer get upset about watching this movie. I would rather sit through this movie and see it so that I could find all the pain points for Spencer and then come back to the episode just so I could rub it in Spencer's face in terms of those moments that happened.
How so, have I hurt you so badly? But that's what you're doing with your life.
You know what? It's content, man. It's content. But that was part of the expectations I had. Like, I didn't expect much, and maybe that worked for the better. I did not expect, you know, any grand scale, epic adaptation of a manga. Sorry to anybody who listens, that watches or reads manga. I know it wasn't going to be like the greatest adaptation, because we've seen horrible adaptations already. Mm-hmm. We've seen everything from Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, gosh.
I don't even want to go through all of them. Like, they were bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes around to this, I was like, okay, now the girl looks really weird with the big eyes. It's very anime like. And I'm not too sold on the story yet, because it hasn't really sold me. But I'd be willing to give it a shot. One thing on this podcast that we always talk about is we're always willing to give things a fair shake, no matter how much Spencer complains. So, needless to say, we decided to check it out. And I in terms of expectations, that was it. I didn't have a very high bar set. Like, in fact, it was pretty low, just in terms of what I was going to see, mainly because I really wanted to get Spencer upset.
Yeah, I've noticed the theme of that for you.
What about you, Al? So coming into this and recognizing all the things that you were seeing in the trailers and with, you know, the film coming out, what were you expecting?
Well, it you know, the expectation I have for it didn't meet it. I mean, everything in the trailers that I saw, I mean, it's most definitely was in the movie, but I really enjoyed the movie. You know, I walked out of there. There is a regret. I think about it. I was like, man, you know what? I am not a 3D person. I cannot watch 3D movies. I can't sit in front. But this seemed like a type of movie that I could sit in front of an IMAX theater with 3D glasses on and probably enjoy this movie. Not knowing of the history of Alita or, you know, the background of it, just being a movie guy, I wanted to see it. I want to watch it, and I actually walked in and say I enjoyed this movie.
What about you, Spence?
All right.
Oi. All right.
The first time I watched the trailer, like, I could not see past her eyes. Like, her eyes were so disturbing to me. Like, I was just like, when it wasn't originally on our list of movies to see, I was like, oh, good. I don't have to deal with Eye Lady and whatever is happening in that movie. But then last week, when you told me we had to go see it, like, I was very disappointed that I had to, like, stare at those eyes for 2 hours. Like, that's really...
She haunts your dreams, Spence.
Like, it was just doing too much, like, initially. And, like, I learned to ignore it through the movie, but, like, that was a major hurdle. Just
her, like, eyes.
Yeah. Like, it was really bad.
Well, you know, if there was hurdles within that movie, like his eyes, there was a hurdle for me in the movie.
Okay.
One thing I had to try, she was an emotional wreck.
Alita?
Alita.
Yeah. For a robot who just was awakened into the world at this point in time, or who has been asleep. So, mind you, needless to say, real quick, there are going to be spoilers in this conversation. So if you're listening and you haven't seen the movie, tough noogies. Movie's been out for at least a weekend and a half, so you should get yourself to the theaters. But for as long as this girl has been asleep, which you find out in the film she's been asleep for about 300 years and rebooted back to life, so to speak.
Well, like, see, that's debatable because the movie doesn't really say that. Like,
yeah, it does.
Well, no, because, like...
The doctor literally says, or she goes, well, so what, am I 300 years old? And he goes, what did he say? Honey, yes, indeed, or yes, you are.
Because if she's really been asleep for 300 years, like, he found her on the top of a trash pile. Why was she on the top? She should have been much deeper in.
Have you ever knocked over that pile of clothes you have in your room and you found that one shirt just like, oh, I've been wondering where that shirt's
been at. He didn't knock over anything. What are you talking about? He was like, a robot. I shall take it.
Maybe other people push it around and that's how he was able to find it.
But, like,
in the pile.
That still looks like a valuable piece of equipment that you could, like, scrap for something. That just seems odd to leave it there.
Like, it's the convenience of cinema, Spencer.
Yeah, but, like, the movie does a lot of things that are like, well, isn't this convenient? Like, way too much, though.
A lot of movies do that.
Doesn't make it okay.
So let's go ahead and just jump right in, shall we? The film obviously opens up on, you see the floating city. I didn't even catch the name of the city. Anybody?
Zalem.
Zalem, that's right. No, because every time I kept thinking of Zalem, I kept thinking of Zion from The Matrix. And I'm like, why does that? No, wait. It's not the, for a single moment in time, I thought maybe there were like, it's like a crossover type thing, but no. But you get this really great, you know, shot of the camera panning from Zalem to the scrap heap and the piles of all these robot parts and whatnot. And you see, which, mind you, that particular scene is taken directly from the anime. So that's actually pretty cool. Dr. Ito is essentially doing the exact same thing as he is in the anime. So that's actually really cool to have that homage. I wanted to kind of pinpoint on that. The whole him taking out the eye from the skull and wrapping it in something and putting it in his bag and then holding up Alita when he finds her, that is literally shot for shot the anime. But you're introduced to Christoph Waltz, who is Dr. Ito, who is the cybernetic doctor who puts everybody back together. He finds this young girl, or the upper torso, actually, of this young robotic cyborg, played by Rosa Salazar, gives her the name Alita because she doesn't remember her name. Right away, one of the things I want to notice is this little girl is probably a gold mine for restaurants who want great Yelp reviews. Because, like, they'll serve her, like, some fruit, and she's like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever! Write a good review. I mean, yeah, I would definitely send her to any restaurant to give a good review.
She almost gave an orange a bad review because she didn't know to peel it.
Well, I mean, some things need instructions, you know, but but it's you're recognizing right away that this young girl is something unique because not only is she experiencing all these things at the same time, but she also doesn't remember anything from her past. She just knows that she was in the scrapyard and now she's fixed. She has a fully functional brain in her head, which that's one of the things I didn't know. When they say she had a brain, because I know when he does the scan and all that, do they mean like a human brain or like a metal, like a technological brain?
I would assume
because her heart is
all
metal.
Human brain, but yes, the heart does make things kind of off. But then again, she's also eating, so like he did mention that was like nutrients for her brain or something. So I don't know. It's a bit confusing.
I assumed it was a human brain.
Oh, see, and I didn't know because like I didn't know what parts were. Because in my mind, I'm just thinking, logically speaking, there's such a thing as decomposition. And if this thing has been sitting in the scrapyard for 300 years with no nourishment, I mean, what has it been feeding off of?
See, it's odd. That's what I'm saying.
I'm just
saying it's odd.
I'm not refuting the fact that it's odd. I'm just wondering, like, because I don't know if it was just like, oh, well, she has what is the makings of what looks to be a human brain. But then, I don't know. One of the things about this film is there are a lot more. I ended this film
with
a lot
more
questions.
Yes.
And I think right away, you are, as you're introduced to Alita, the problem for me is that every single scene she's in just had me asking more and more questions from the beginning. Like, and maybe that's not so much of a bad thing, but for me, it was kind of like, there's a certain point of resolution where you're like, okay, I understand this, or I grasp that, or I'm hearing that. And I kept feeling like, so she was in the junkyard, so she can fight now, so she can slide and save a dog and do all these different things. Like, yeah. there was a lot more things that was coming up, and it didn't really seem to be getting answered. I just, everything continued to boil and boil and boil, and I was like, when is this going to pop off? I don't know. How did you feel, Al?
Well, I first of all, when I watch movies, I'm either going to enjoy them or I'm not. I don't really try to dissect the movie and, you know, look at it. If it was that case, I wouldn't be able to enjoy myself because there's a lot of movies that we could look at. Say, well, yeah, right. That's unbelievable. Yeah, right. Yeah, that really happened. That just so convenient that so happened to be there. So, but, you know, looking at this, watching this movie, I mean, of course, there's a lot of things that you could question. But there is one, like I was saying, the emotional side of it is like, there was a couple scenes on there like, oh my gosh, are you serious? I mean, when the robot and the human fell in love with each other, you know, that might have had a lot of questions that I was going through my mind. I was like,
it's like her all over again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I, you know, but again, other than that, I was able to really, really enjoy the movie. I'm not saying it was the best movie I saw. I can't say, hey, you got to watch this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I walked out and said, you know, it was a good movie. It's something that, I think maybe, hey, I would want, hey, my family, hey, you guys, let's watch this movie.
Yeah.
So when it comes out in 4K, maybe just rent it or something like that.
Well, and you actually bring up the introduction of another character, Hugo. Hugo is this, he's like this parts runner that you meet early on. He's somebody who is good friends with Dr. Ito. He knows, he's connected throughout Iron City. Iron City being the city that's on the level floor that sits underneath Zalem, which Zalem is one of the, so a little backstory, Zalem is one of the last floating cities in the sky after what is known as the Great War or the Great Fall.
Yeah,
the fall, which happened 300 years prior.
Right.
Is this movie related to Elysium for some reason?
You know what?
The Matt Damon movie?
It's very, it does feel like Elysium.
It does, because everybody's trying to get to Elysium.
Or Zalem in this case.
And in this case, it's Zalem.
Because it's a place to live.
And everybody gets all these cybernetic. I think there's a little bit of a ripoff here from, who did Elysium? No, not Neil Blomkamp. I forget. But like, I'm trying to think. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two. Now that I'm thinking about it.
I was thinking about this, like, man, it just so reminded me of Matt Damon and Elysium. I mean, him trying to get to this, he was a kind of human robot. And
yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking about that. So are they related somehow?
Right. But so with Hugo, this unique guy, one of the things with Hugo is he's this guy who knows everybody. He's well-connected, wants to get to Zalem, one of the, or the actual guy who runs Iron City. His name is Vector. He is played by Mahershala Ali. He promises Hugo that he will get him to Zalem if he gets him a million credits, or he essentially gets him a million credits worth of parts. So, needless to say, Hugo has a lot of things that go on that not everybody knows about. I appreciate the usage of unknown actors in these roles. Rosa Salazar actually has done some work on the Maze Runner series.
Yes, I
which
remember.
Which we've reviewed a couple of them.
You didn't like the Maze Runner?
No.
The last one wasn't that great. The first one was good. The second one was okay. The last one kind of was a little funky. I don't even remember how it ended.
It ended with, like, them going to an island.
Ah. Oh, that's right. And some people made it and some people didn't.
Yeah.
That's right. But needless to say, Hugo, I think Hugo should have been played by somebody a little bit more nuanced. Like, and that's my own personal preference. Nothing against Keen Johnson. But I think there should have been a little bit more, I don't know, maybe a little bit more gravitas to his performance in this film. He was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you got people like Christoph Waltz, who plays Dr. Ito. You got Jennifer Connelly, who plays another doctor. You have Mahershala Ali, who plays one of the main bad guys. These are all great actors.
Right.
Rosa Salazar, she's a good actress. She's done several things. And like I said, she had a really good footing on the role. I think Hugo, because of how much you see him, I just feel like he should have been somebody a little bit more, like, well-rounded as a performer. Like, a performer who was a little bit more well-rounded probably could have done a better job. I don't know. That's my personal opinion. What do you guys think?
I don't know. Like, the character of Hugo himself makes a lot of dumb decisions. And I don't know if someone, like, a better actor could, like,
make better dumb decisions?
Yeah, like, that's basically what it sounds like asking.
What do you think, Al?
I'm not too familiar with the Hugo guy and what other movies he's done.
I think this is one of his first ones. Because I think anything else, it's...
I kind of looking him up, you know, just trying to see what movies he's done. And you just see multiple Alita. So, I mean, as far as his character, what he's done, I mean, if they could have, you know, could have put other people in there just as well as any other character.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I wasn't too fond of his character either. He seemed, I don't want to say a little too soft.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just him himself was kind of a little, both of their characters are kind of just a little too emotional through this whole movie.
Yeah. And with him, it seemed like it for her, emotionality, like her coming into, you know, the revelation of everything that she had going on. I mean, I could understand that. But him, like you said, I would have preferred him to be a little bit more, like, a little bit more tough, somebody who was a little bit more, like, gristled, somebody who had a little bit more grit to him as a performer to give to the role. Because seeing Hugo as this teenager who's just, like, it felt like the Hunger Games all over. He looked like PETA. He seemed like the PETA of this film. And I was just like, I didn't really feel his performance. Her, I could understand. I was actually enjoying some of the things that she was doing. Mm-hmm. Christoph Waltz is an incredible performer. I could follow him, just him juggling. Like, I would watch him do that. I would pay to go see that.
You know who would bring a good role for that is what's his name from The Maze Runner, the main character.
Oh, the main kid.
I totally forgot his name. He also played in the Teen Wolf series.
Oh.
The main character, Maze Runner. Come on, you guys.
Oh, the guy who played Thomas.
Yeah.
Dylan O'Brien.
Yeah.
I think he would have been really, really good because he could have brought more of the tough guy, you know, mm-hmm. As far as because Hedo's character, he was supposed to be a thief who went and jacked other parts. And I don't know if you caught it in the movie, but I think it didn't really say it, but just briefly, they originally were supposed to rob Alita for her parts. I don't know if you remember that, because remember his buddy said, you know, you...
You should have scrapped her for parts when you had the chance or something.
Or stuck to the plan or something like that. So I think originally, you know, he befriended her because they were going to rob her parts.
Hmm. That's actually a good point. Because I remember him saying that, but I never really gave it much thought. That's towards like the third act of the film when there's this whole confrontation and Hugo's just like, you know, he's getting into it with his friend, and ultimately his friend tells him that's why we should have scrapped her for part. We should have taken her parts when we had the chance or whatever. Essentially saying, you know, we should have killed her then and taken the stuff so that we could make money. But it's true. I've never thought of it that way. But it's still like, even his friends, even the other people, they had a little bit more nuance to them. Like even what is his name? Todd.
Mm-hmm.
The other friend of the group. He seemed a little bit more Tanji. He seemed a little bit more nuanced, and he had a little bit more mystery to him and whatnot. And I felt like Hugo was a big miss, because it could have been a bigger opportunity, and it may have even actually added to like the overall viewing experience of the film, because you do see a lot of Hugo.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt about it. Hugo, wherever Alita is, usually Hugo's nearby. And I think that's one of the weaker points of the film in terms of on the protagonist side. I would have probably used a different performer, maybe even Dylan O'Brien. I think that's a really good choice or good option. But one of the other things that I thought was kind of a big misstep was using Jackie Earl Haley as one of the main henchmen. He was Grishka.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, if you've ever seen Jackie Earl Haley, and I don't know if this is similar to what Infinity War did with Peter Dinklage, but Jackie Earl Haley is not a very big man. He's, I believe he's like 5 foot something. He's a small framed guy. He's very like unassuming. So the fact that they made him into this giant robotic like juggernaut, it was really interesting in them choosing to do that, because I don't know if it's like them kind of having fun with it and saying like, oh well, Jackie Earl Haley's only 5 foot two and maybe weighs like 110 pounds soaking wet, so let's make him this ginormous robot and like make it really interesting. Like I said, much like how they did to Peter Dinklage in Infinity War. But I didn't really like his take on that particular robot. Like, I think that robot, for a name like Grishka, let me just say the elephant in the room. I figured it should have been somebody who may have been Russian, maybe even with a Russian accent. I'm thinking Grishka. I'm thinking like, eh, the robot is back again to fight. You know, I wanted to, I mean, even if it was a bad accent, I mean, still.
Okay, but like, nobody's names really matched up to nationalities, though.
How do you know?
Like, Christopher Waltz's character, his last name is Ito.
We don't know if he doesn't speak, I almost said Spanish. We don't know if he doesn't speak Japanese. I'm just saying, I don't know. I felt like using him, I think there could have been a better usage for him. Like, I honestly think Jackie Earl Haley would have made a better, like, evil person, like almost like he would have made a better Nova if Nova
had
more.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Better Nova.
If Nova had a lot more speaking parts or more visible speaking parts, because you don't really ever hear Nova. Nova is this all-seeing overseer who lives in Zalem and kind of flows in and out of cybernetic beings who are made to have a connection to Nova. Like he can inhabit their bodies and take over them and talk through them, which is really weird because it's like he's like the ultimate ventriloquist without having to put your hand anywhere. but he's very, you know, off to the side. You see his face maybe once or twice. You see him with his really weird, the really weird glasses from Ghost in the Shell, those small little bottle cap glasses.
That are pointless.
But when you finally find out, spoiler alert, that he is played by Edward Norton, you know that when this next movie comes out, Edward Norton's nasally voice is going to be what you've been hearing all this time. And no offense to Edward Norton, I think he's a great performer, but I'm kind of over him being the villain. Like, I would rather have Jackie Earl Haley or anybody else other than him.
Well, you know, since, you know, we're kind of picking this film apart, I mean, now that you got my mind going, there is some things that when they finally showed Nova, I'm like, is that Doc from Back to the Future? He's back.
He's back.
In the future. But, you know, yeah, I guess I was thinking Nova. I mean, when you think of that name Nova, I mean, you're thinking, you know, one bad character, but it ended up being Doc from Back to the Future.
I almost thought he was that one actor who always plays the, going back to my Russian fixation, that one actor who always plays usual Russian characters. He played the devil in Constantine. I thought, actually, that was who Nova was for the longest. Like, every time they kept showing him, I was like, oh, it's that one actor. Okay, well, I guess, whatever. He usually plays bad guy, whatever. But then at the very end of the film, he finally takes off those bottle cap sunglasses, and you see, oh, it's Edward Norton. Which means when the sequel for this film starts getting made, Edward Norton's going to have creative differences. He's going to go his own way, cause a big issue, and they're going to recast the role.
Are you still upset about the whole Incredible
I am
Hulk thing?
Always upset. That was so dumb.
It was really dumb.
But, you know, it doesn't matter if you embody a certain role or not. Your creative direction is just as important as the director, as well as the film studio itself. Everybody has a say. You are not the only person who carries the entire film. You are not that important. Great example. Mark Ruffalo's doing just fine. So, I'm off my soapbox. But either way, I don't know how long he's actually going to stay in this role, and if James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez have like a great relationship with him to where that's not going to happen. Because you know it's going to happen.
It's fine. Just get Mark Ruffalo to replace him again.
I swear, if Mark Ruffalo comes out in the next one, he's the one who's got that. I will laugh. I will go and personally buy out every seat of that film and just hand it to people and say, this is what you get for being a jerk in Hollywood. This is what you get for being a jerk in Hollywood. Go ahead. Go check it out. It's like a sideshow. But honestly, though, back to what I was saying, I don't know how strong of a villain Edward Norton is going to be in the sequels. Because you know they're going to make a sequel.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that was kind of like that whole, like, expecting something really grand, a great reveal. Like, you think of that, I think of the first Fantastic Beasts movie. When you're watching Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and you're trying to figure out all that's going on, and at the very end, Colin Farrell, who's been this really awkward and weird guy, they finally show that he's actually Grindelwald, and if you've seen the films, you're like, oh, that means that, oh, they're going to have the big showdown between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, and you're like, you get excited. And that was for me, because I like the Harry Potter movies. I know the lore. That was for me an exciting reveal. I like that.
I actually never seen the Fantastic Beasts movie, so you just kind of spoiled it for me.
Yeah! Well, we did say spoiler alert.
Yeah.
We didn't say which movie.
But then that goes to like also bad spoiler like reviews or like reveals like with Solo at the end of Solo, and you got Darth Maul at the end of that. And then you're like, but wait, he's supposed to die in like a year, according to the canon storyline.
Yeah, that was confusing.
It didn't make any sense. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading too much into that. I don't know. But if I'm a fan of something, I'm obviously going to invest in it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to see all the shows. I'm going to see all the cartoons. I'm going to read as much as I can. Like, when it came to this movie, I'm not a fan of it, but I'll do my due diligence, and I'll read some of the stuff it's based off of. I'll check out the anime. I will do some type of research to get a good footing. And I'm going to be honest, for everybody who's opposed this film, it does give homage to the anime, to the original source material, as best as I've seen it so far.
Yeah, that's surprising.
It's very surprising. and it's actually pretty cool to see. But it's those key characters that you have to see really like hit right and done right that help create a better experience of seeing the film. And those two particular characters, although they may seem very minimal, like, oh, you only find out who Nova is at the very end. Oh, okay, well, that's nothing bad. Or Hugo's just a kid. He's not even a main character. They add to, they're the supporting pillars, if you will, of the protagonist. They're the things that help the protagonist get to the place of like, okay, this person is either going to be a grand hero or she's going to be a major flop. And it's up to these side characters to help kind of push that in the right direction. And so that's why I say, like with Hugo, I really wish Hugo was even that particular performer, like even if he was just a little bit more like gruff, if there was a little bit more grit to him in the role, maybe he was told to perform it like, I don't know, like a sissy or something. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure.
Oh my gosh.
It just didn't seem tough enough.
I know exactly what you're talking about because, I mean, again, spoiler alert. the one scene where what's his name? Zapan?
Uh-huh.
Is it Zapan? Well,
that was Zapan.
Zapan. When he was chasing him, he ends up calling Lee to help me. Help. I mean, he's like.
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, you're a man.
No, I am on his side on this one. I will call my robot girlfriend to beat this guy up because what is he going to do? He's just a flesh bag.
But this guy knows the city. I mean, there's no underground passages or secret hiding places. This guy is just a cyborg. He doesn't have, like, at any point in time, you don't know that. What's his name? Zapan? I keep wanting to call him Pan Am, and that's a flight. That's an airline. I was like, is it Pan Am? No, it's Pan Zapan. Am. Marzipan. No, Zapan. He didn't have, like, heat vision, or he doesn't have, like, these ultra-sensory perceptors that allow him to, like, really track somebody better than anybody else. He seemed just like anybody else.
No, he should be, like, a pretty good... He's a bounty hunter. He should be good at tracking people.
Yeah, but to
that's
what
his
extent?
Job.
To what extent? Like, he's always walking in the middle of the street to look for bounties. I figure if he wanted to make money and he was that good, he could find all of them and get all the money.
Well, I got to say, his armor was pretty cool. That's a
yeah, although, that yeah.
Good. Yeah, I mean,
his back plates.
The back plate, it's supposed to be the tattoo, the Japanese artwork in the back on the metal. That was.
Was it Japanese?
I got that impression, but I don't know that for
a fact. I was getting like strong like Aztec vibes, like that sundial thing. I don't know.
I just thought, you know, because he looked like kind of samurai with the samurai sword and Zapan. So
yeah, it is one letter off of Japan.
So I just
they weren't trying to hit it on the head. They weren't trying to push anything. But that goes to like some of the other great side characters like. Like Zapan, who's played by Ed Skrin, he plays one of the what's called hunter warriors, which are these individuals who are bounty hunters who look for and eliminate, so to speak, bad folk. So and seeing some of the actual other, hunter warriors, I actually kind of got excited because you got a lot of really interesting performers who play certain ones like Rick Yoon, who was the bad guy, or he was one of the guys in the first Fast and the Furious. He actually played Master Lee, Master Clive Lee. You had a couple other individuals. One of the guys that I actually really like, and the only reason why I like him is because he always keeps showing up in all the little indie films. The guy who had all the cybernetic dogs.
Oh, that guy?
He pops up in just about every independent film out there, and it's so great because I actually like him. I like when he's on the screen. He's just fun. But their whole role is essentially they try to keep the peace while getting paid. So they're paid security.
Right.
And then you have Dr. Ito, who you find out is one of those as well. And that kind of leads towards the inciting incident that pushes the film into everything that happens. They get upset. They get into this big bout with Grishka, who is being protected by Nova, whom Nova wants him to go and retrieve Alita because Alita is this, you know, super advanced robot that does not need to exist because she's a robot from what happens to be a 300-year-old, you know, cybernetic army that knows these secret ways of this particular fighting style. And yeah, I think that kind of puts it all in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Oh, almost forgetting, in the middle of all of it, they're playing Motorball, which is a cybernetic or a cyberpunk version of Rollerball, if you've ever seen that movie. James Caan.
No, I've heard. I remember
they made
that
a remake
movie
with LL Cool J.
Yes, I remember that, but I didn't remember. Could look weird.
Either way, it's the same thing. Which it doesn't play a huge role in the film, but it did. It was in it enough to where I actually wanted to know more about the game.
The rules of the game, maybe. Like, this is the, like, one of the problems I have with this movie is that it sets up things, but then just doesn't tell you enough about the thing it set up to leave you just a little frustrated. Like, I want to know a little bit more about the rules of Rollerball, because, like, during one of the Rollerball games, like, this dude kills another dude, and I'm like, oh, I guess this is how this game works. And then a second later, a commentator says, is that even legal? And I'm like, how does this game even work? And then, like, the Great War that they set up, like, they only set up combatants, but not, like, the reasons why or how this really started. And, like, I really wanted to know more about, like, that whole war thing and, like, how Nova, like, what he even did and how he was, like, a part of it. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of things there that, like, I can see are, like, part of the backstory. But, like, I kind of wanted to know a lot more about those aspects.
Can you say that smart directing? Because I mean, it left a lot of questions, you know, unanswered questions. So I guess we gotta wait for the next movie to get the answer to some of them questions.
Yeah, but this is the day of binging. Who really has time to wait 3 years?
He's got a point. But I do have to agree. Like, there is a certain, yes, there is a certain amount of mystery. There still should be a certain amount of ambiguity, if you will, when it comes to films.
Yeah.
Where when you're watching it, yes, you don't want anybody to give you the whole, you know, not to give away the whole farm. You just, you know, get little glimpses here and there. You get to see things. The problem is I never got enough of the big picture to still say at the end of the film, I think I want to see more of this picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I enjoyed it enough. Like, it was a great experience to go see the film. It was, I can only imagine how good it is in 3D. I'm not a big 3D moviegoer. It makes me sick sometimes because just the way the glasses work. But I would honestly give this one a chance in 3D just because of the way it was filmed. It's actually filmed to be seen in 3D. So if you go and see it at the theaters without the 3D and you're like, oh, wait, well, that looks like it should be. Yes, it should be done in 3D. You should be seeing it in 3D. But I do have to say that because of a lot of the parts in the film that left me wondering more so, not in a good way. Like, I was like, well, wait, what happened in that entire season while she was playing Motorball? I want to see, like, her first bout, actual serious full game, which may give me some more ideas of how the game is played, you know, or kind of seeing more of, like, okay, well, what has happened in the last, what was it, 6 months from the way time has progressed at the end of the film? 6 months has gone by. Like, did they ever find the bits of Hugo? Apparently Hugo falls and you never hear from him again, but yeah, it's been like 6 months. And or what about, like, what happened with, you know, Dr. Shirin, who gets chopped up and her eyeballs and everything get kind of pushed to the side in a room? Like, what happened to her? like I there were a lot of questions that I was wondering that I felt like they should have been answered before the film ended. I could have sat and be like, okay, I guess they'll attack like how her whole career in Motorball went in the next film. I could do that. Or but like with Hugo, let's do a Superman or like a Man of Steel ending here and let his, you know, remains or what was it? Batman versus Superman. See like some remains float on him, on the top of his casket. Like I want to know if he's going to come back. Like give me a little teaser. Like I tease me a bit. I want a little.
You know, one thing that I'm not saying it's a problem, but my wife tells me, she goes, you always try to, you know, think ahead and try to figure out the movie. And I gave you my thoughts on what I think. I'm not saying it just, you know, how my mind was going about Hugo and not seeing him, what did happen to him.
Uh-huh.
And I was sharing with you guys before we started, you know, man, maybe this might happen in the next movie. You know, it could be far-fetched. I mean, but I'm thinking maybe Nova could eventually go and find Hugo. I mean, because he was turned into a robot.
Uh-huh.
Bring him up and then restore him. I don't know, wipe away his memory somehow. And then next you know, when Alita, of course, we could see it happening. She's going to be ending up winning the rollerball and mm-hmm. end up going to the
Zalem.
And that's where I guess the championship game is. And next you know, she might be battling Hugo. And that's just probably far-fetched. But then that also
screams from like Hunger Games too, in my mind. And maybe Suzanne Collins got it from this, or maybe this got it from Suzanne Collins. Who knows? But the whole like with PETA getting captured and then getting brainwashed, and then he becomes like this anti... you know, what's her name from the film? Why am I drawing a blank?
I don't know.
The main girl from Hunger Games.
Okay.
Either way, like he becomes like all anti her and he hates her and he wants to kill her and this and that. Like I'm thinking if that's the way they go,
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence's character.
How can we forget
Katniss
her name?
Everdeen?
Katniss Everdeen. Why didn't you say something?
I didn't see this movie.
You're fired. But, like, he becomes, like, all anti-Katniss, and he wants to kill her, and every time he sees her, he goes into, like, this huge rage. I don't know. If that were to be the direction they go, they would have to make it very unique enough where I don't feel like I'm seeing Hunger Games 2 again.
Maybe he just takes over his body instead.
Well, either way, wrapping this up, let's go ahead and go around the table. So, for those who are not aware how we do things, here on the Film Oscars, we pass or fail the film, and then we give the film a rating out of 5 based on monocles, because that's who we are. We're the Film Oscars. So, in terms of passing or failing, I'm going to start this off and say the film does pass for me. It actually has a unique and fun story. I actually enjoy the homages back to the original anime, and I love the fact that they don't forget what is most important in this movie, which it's not focusing on the computer graphics, but there's actual story to it, even if some of the performers are not the best. So the film passes for me, and in terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a middle ground 3 out of 5 monocles, because it was good. I wouldn't mind seeing it in 3D because that's the way it was filmed, but I feel like there are a lot of things they need to work on before I can trust that the next film is going to be better than the first.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I sit. What about you, Spence?
Oh, yeah, this movie passes for me. You know, I'm really surprised that this is actually a decent movie because it's an anime adaption. Normally, those are all hot garbage whenever they're, like, translated into live action. But, like, this was actually really well done for that. There's still, like, a few, you know, questions, which are fine, but there's other questions I probably shouldn't have at this point. So I think I will tag along with you and say 3 out of 5 monocles.
What about you, Al?
Well, most definitely, like I shared with you guys, I enjoyed the movie, so it does pass. Coming from the average guy, you know, just wanted to go watch the movie, and, you know, something that I seen in the trailer, and I think I'll enjoy that movie. I most definitely, again, I didn't leave the movie theater saying, hey, you got to go see this movie. I didn't go home and tell my wife, hey, this movie is good. You got to watch this movie. But most definitely, it passes. And if you do, want to decide to go watch it, and if you haven't watched it already, I would probably suggest, just like Eddie was saying, a 3D IMAX 3D movie. You might enjoy it a little more. Again, I'm not a 3D guy.
Yeah, same here.
It gives me headaches. But maybe that one movie, I probably should have said, hey, you know what, this one, I just go watch it in 3D. Because we had the opportunity to watch it in 3D. But if it would have been, I'd rather have done it in IMAX theater. But yeah. Again, it passes. And I would give it also a 3. So, I did enjoy the movie.
There you go. Well, that about wraps up another awesome review of the film Lost Spurs. Remember, you can check out this film. It's currently in theaters, so check out your local listings at your theaters and see if you can get out there and see it. You can also check out a couple upcoming weekend releases, as this weekend we got How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, and Fighting With My Family, which is produced actually by Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So if you're looking for a good film to check out, you can check out those two as well as this one. This is a great conversation, and you can check out all these and more at thefilmlosophers.com, where we have now 150 episodes. So check us out there, listen in, let us know your thoughts on our Facebook and Twitter Twitter pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. This was fun, and it was great having you on, Al. So I'm glad you were here, and I hope you had fun too.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's really cool hanging out with you guys. Chad, I think I met you one time, but hopefully I done your seat justice. And if you wear a size 11 and a half, hopefully I filled your shoes in well and represented your thoughts. But again, thanks for having me, and hopefully I'll be able to come on again.
So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Alex.
Class dismissed.